everyone. Welcome back to This Is Ro. Here we are, part two, telling you more about analog photography and Master Ro, and let's just get into it. For anyone who has been alive before the 90s, knows that every camera was on film. So when I'm referring to analog photography, it's instant imagery like Polaroid, but also film photography. For the general population, if you've ever photographed film, it would have been 35 millimeter. You had around 36 images you can shoot. Disposable cameras, that's film. And then I also shoot 120 film. The size of the film and how much bigger the pictures become. My school that I attended, they actually were one of the two schools left who specialized in color analog photography, like film photography. So they had both a black and white darkroom and a color darkroom. For those who aren't sure if they know what that is, in a movie when they're developing film into a photograph with the red light and the three buckets, and then you can just submerge this piece of paper into some type of liquid, and then this magic of an image just appears. That's a darkroom for black and white photography. In the color darkroom, you can't have any light on because this paper is too sensitive. With that in mind, the process is much more tedious. It takes much longer for you to actually see the image, but you have all the options to print them yourself. All right, so this department specifically was an analog photography department. There was one or two people that only specialized in digital, but it was just different because your specialty and all your teachers, their specialty is analog photography. So what you're learning is the basics. It's like driving a stick shift versus a automatic car. So you're going to learn everything very limited. Your f-stop, your shutter speed. I, however, love that about analog photography because I get really overwhelmed when there's just too many options. Sometimes you just want one box of cereal and that's all you fucking need. And if you have 20 different kinds, like it's just overwhelming and you end up leaving with none. You are the zoom. Your camera is not. Unless you get a more digitized analog camera. But like, what's the point? Might as well go digital by that point. All the cameras that I've used, I am the zoom, not the camera. When you're shooting black and white photography, you need to finish the entire film and shoot all the images before you can change the film into color. So what does that mean? It means that you have to understand what your style is, how you want to capture your moments, your buildings, your people, your nature, why you're doing it in black and white, why you're doing it in color. Is it the paper you're going to use to print it on later? Is it going to be part of another series? There's a lot of pre-thought and planning that you have to do. Through time, that gets a lot easier. Because you just know what you like, you know what you want, you know where you're going. So it doesn't really become that much of a problem. I've known people who only shot black and white and they only shot black and white in a particular brand. I know people who only wanted to shoot digital and color. One of the things that my department was very against was kind of like, it was like against, but it's like, if you're going to be part of an analog photography department, it's like, don't shoot digital and then make it black and white. You know, if you're going to do it, then just do it. No shade or anything like that. It's just preference. So when I go on a trip, let's take that as an example. So when I went to Singapore in 2014, I have a middle format camera, so 120. I have a 35 millimeter camera, a Fuji instant film, Polaroid film, and then the 35 millimeter and 120 film both have colored and black and white. And then I only have two brands that I use, one brand for color, one brand for black and white, and then here and there, an experimental brand that I don't really care about. So I'm traveling with like 13 kilos worth of cameras on my shoulder. And then you just got to go trek on the street, look for your moments, look for the people, look for the energy, you know, explore. So be a tourist, a photographer, a director, an artist again, and just a person who is foreign. I have ran after people and I would say my photo is running away because they'd be running away from me. I've had moments that were missed because I shot the last shot on the film and forgot to change out the film because I wanted to get my other camera. There was another picture. So you lose your momentum, you lose your moment. So now we have the pre-meditation. So the pre-work that you do when you go on a trip, then you have going on the trip, and then you have coming back from the trip. Then you develop your film. Either you do it yourself or you get it done. Then scan it all in or go into the dark room, right? When you go through that process, you go through the trip again. And when all that is said and done, you print out your work, or it's printed already because of the dark room. And that is your last journey, by putting it all up, taking a step back. And now you just have to live in it and let it live on the wall. Most of us now do it on our laptop and virtually, but in theory, you should always be printing your photography. You go on the trip physically once, but emotionally you go on that trip at least four times. And then when that body of work, all of a sudden you got to make an album out of it, then you got to exhibit it somewhere, that takes a whole other journey. With digital photography, I find that I get really lazy. Like I can just fix the aperture or exposure later. Oh, I just saw the photo. I didn't think it was that great. I'll just delete it now. Doesn't matter. I can take it as many times as I want until I get it perfect. In the analog mentality, you have to trust your gut that much more. You have to trust your process that much more. Mind you, every person has a different process, also with an analog photography. You have to trust that you will figure it out and that it will come together. Because I can't take a picture and then look at the back of the camera and then just be like, oh, I think this was great. Or, oh, I think I'll just wait for this one person to move out of the shot, right? Like, there is no turning back. You also better believe that if you're going to get your film developed, that you know who you're giving that to, an expert. And if you're doing it yourself, you know that there is a really big possibility that you're going to get it wrong. And if you fuck up, there's no other way to get those images back. So there's high pressure and a lot of self, I mean, there's resilience, grit, but there's also this self-confidence of like, I have to figure it out. Not to have it perfect, but if something goes wrong, that you know how to fix it. That's where that comes from. Not that it's a perfect way of going about it. You will have to learn how to Photoshop it, because if you digitize it or in Lightroom, you just have to know how to edit, you know, your work digitally, which I still have a lot to learn from that. And if you're in a dark room, there's temperature, there's chemicals, there's your light bulb. There's just so many moving parts. And I love the practice of trusting yourself. I love the practice of time. And I love the practice of patience. Because the best work I've made are always done on film. So when you practice all of that, you get better as you go. You get better at using your cameras. You get better at using your cameras in the field or in the studio when you're working with a subject. There is a lot of trust in like natural lighting, Mother Nature. She has her own plan. Knowing where you're going, how you're traveling. I have a $7 canvas tote bag that I use. It's the best bag that I've ever owned for my process of photography. Just because my bag isn't $200 doesn't mean that my process sucks. My process is my process, and no one can take that away from me. So no one can take that away from you. Analog photography is like life, taking on the unknown. All you got to do is live your life and the answers will come. You'll be able to connect the dots and understand why the universe is giving you these opportunities, why you're meeting these people. The whys. And I think that's what gravitates me to analog photography every time. The hardest times also was in my 20s because I was severely depressed. So if I see as photography as being like life, then obviously it's going to be hard. My mentality and my mindset is very different today. But that took a lot of work and a lot of healing. And whether or not anybody agrees with that, my work and my photography helped me get there. That's the reason why I will always choose analog photography. For as long as I can do it, I will suffer through carrying heavy cameras because it's magic to me. So in 2014, I graduated art school. I'm on this high. I get invited to a gathering about a group show in Amsterdam. And we come to this group event. It's like the first meet and greet. And this artist who invited me tells me, I really connected with you and I want you to co-curate. I'd love to tell you that I was in such a mature place to understand what that meant, for my career, what that meant for the group, what that meant in art. I really wish that I did. However, the reality was that I didn't. I just always kind of said yes to everything. And a lot of the times that worked out. And there were other times where you're like, oh God, what did I do? How do I get myself out of this? So we meet up. I meet a lot of these artists who are mainly painters, which is fine. And I said, all right, let's go do this. We go to Amsterdam. Something that I learned from doing a show, like an exhibition, there are so many moving parts, but you have to, like in any entrepreneurial situation, wear a ton of different hats. So I'm the assistant to the curator. I'm also co-curator. Then you have a majority male, all Caucasian group of people. And me and him are the only, you know, non-Caucasians in the group. Not that I care so much. It's just everything that you're telling, the story and the way it's being communicated, the way you're communicating it to the artist, the way you have to, you know, build your relationships and manage them essentially. There's just a way to go about it. And it's just different depending who you're talking to. And I know my audience. So obviously that wasn't really a big problem, but that is something to keep in mind. I believe the show went on for like 2 months. It was a vibe, really. It was really cool. It's in the Warmoestraat in Amsterdam. It's next to the infamous condom shop. It's an amazing condom shop for anyone who wants to go and see that. It's really cool. And right behind it, it's where the red light district starts. So it's a lot of like tourists, a lot of different crowds. There's a lot happening. I thought this was the beginning to everything for me. From here on out, I'm going to go be an artist and I'm going to go travel the world and take pictures and do solo shows and group shows. And I'm going to curate and I'm going to spread this message of purpose and love and creativity and culture. And I was like, this is it. Like, this is my life forever. And it was for 2 months. From Borders of Perception, Destination Unknown, I believe that was the name of the show. What I really loved about the title and what the curator really tried to do, what is unknown to people? It is literally the thing that holds people back from going out and chasing their dream or telling a person that they like them. The unknown scares the living out of anyone I speak to or I've spoken to. It is a place where I thrive the most. The unknown. There is a part of me that survival mode meets adventure. It's kind of a crazy mentality, but like if you're alone and there's no one here to help you, how far can you push yourself to accomplish that task or scenario or situation? And you'd be really surprised what it is that you can achieve with that type of mentality. You know, take it with a grain of salt, obviously, but that has helped me a lot through photography, traveling and doing photography, traveling by myself, traveling with other people, just moving and shifting my life into places and situations where the unknown is the main character of the show. I've never negotiated money before. I've never had to deal with organizers before. I've never had to deal with a curator before, never mind be a co-curator. I also find that every idea and vision that I have will always be different to the person who I'm working with. All the time. Well, do you like this or do you like this? I always end up choosing the one that nobody likes. That's just my vision. And I will say a lot of me had to eat a lot of my pride, eat a lot of my ideas, existing in a world where everyone was a guy. There was two other girls and I was it on upper management for the women. So that's also a different way to go about your business. And I am someone who I'm very prideful. I absolutely have an ego, but I also know when it's time to put it aside. And I was able to do that for this show. I really fell in love with the idea of becoming a curator. And I know once someone told me that, like, I can't curate my life. I think I can. And I really have. And that was really not an insult to me. It was actually an eye-opening comment of like, I don't even know why I haven't thought about it that way before. Everything that I've done that has led me up to where I am today, on paper, it doesn't make any sense. But knowing intuitively what it is that you want, or at least the feeling that you want, and being driven by purpose, because there's nothing else in life that will make sense if you don't have purpose. Why not just go for it? Is what I'm saying. Why not just go for it? With the exhibition, it was really wonderful. Let me just go back a little. It was really wonderful. I got to meet a lot of amazing people by networking and hosting and directing and being a leader to these people, these artists. Some people are just artists, right? Like they just need to create, produce art. Then you have people who are managers, and then you have other people who sell the art. And some of us have that all or most of it. And there are others that just don't. And most of the people in the show just didn't have that, which is fine because all they needed to do was show up, produce, and create, right? And then there was a couple of us that would take the opportunity and we would do the rest. When that show came to an end, I don't think I really understood that even at that time, with all the transitions that I've made, with all the shifting and the moving and the integration, I still didn't have the tools to understand that things come to an end and it's okay to feel sad about that and how to cope with that. For a long time, I struggled with the idea of like that nobody cared about my work, and as if that meant that they didn't care about me or how they see me or how they respect me. And a lot of the comments that I did end up getting, you always talk about home and you always talk about travel, but like none of your pictures are pictures of a house or a bus or an airplane, you know, that symbolize travel. And I think it was always this reflection of like, I don't think I'll ever be accepted as being multiracial, multicultural, third culture, like whatever that laundry list of things is. So part of me was really heartbroken. I just didn't understand, right? Also, side note, what people think about you is none of your business. And I'd like to think that it's none of your business to know what other people think about your work. If your mentality is to create for other people, that's more of like the commercial side. That's fine. But I always told myself I didn't want to create for others. I wanted to create for myself. So it's kind of ironic if you think about it. It's just the truth. That's just how I felt. So by the time the show wrapped, I got a job at the casino. We have a lot of paid vacation. And every time I traveled, I thought my work was shit. I just thought it was trash, garbage, basura, terrible. I would call home crying to my mom while I was there. She would have to coach me through. She's like, every time you go on vacation and every time you go take pictures, you say this about yourself. And every time you come back, you surprise yourself. Like you just need to find a way to make peace either with the feeling and the thoughts, or you need to reframe them. But either way, we know that you're going to do great and you know you're going to do great. It comes from a place of that insecurity of, oh, well, people didn't want to buy my work or I wasn't picked up for a gallery. That's a really painful way to live because it's also me telling myself that part of me, that makes me my personality the way it is and how I see the world, how I exist, that I don't accept that part about myself. And if I'm really honest, that is exactly what I did. That's exactly how I felt and made myself feel. And I want to say that Each their own process. I have found amazing photographers who are so well equipped technically, visually, artistically, and say, all I want to do is just photograph corners of buildings. It's not that serious. Doesn't like not every piece of artwork needs to have the weight of the world in that piece. That one piece, like that's so much pressure to put on one piece of artwork. And that has to bring world peace or something. It's just insanity. I'm definitely a person who wants to put all those feelings into a photograph. And it just makes me laugh. I was talking to someone a while ago about a tattoo. And my husband and I both have a great appreciation for tattoos. And it was just like, well, it's just like this represents. And then it was like a whole laundry list of things of what it represented. And you're just like, can it just be a cool tattoo of a spider? Like, does it have to always have this deep rooted core? Sometimes a painting is just amazing. Sometimes a photograph is just amazing framing and timing and color or black and white, whatever it is. And I didn't know that at the time. So I really shamed myself a lot in silence over how I was a fraud, that I wasn't a photographer, that I couldn't even call myself an artist, that there were so many people out there who were much better than me technically, visually, professionally. And it was just a constant sabotaging dance that I danced with myself. And the ironic part too is this, right? That when I ended up meeting my now husband and that whole graffiti scene, and he really, I don't know like how this happened. And sometimes I believe like this is really what was meant to be, is that him being in graffiti really introduced me to a different style and a different place of photography. And using my style of imagery in the graffiti world, I hadn't seen it before. Granted, I haven't been part of the graffiti scene. I'm not a writer, nor do I believe that I'm the representation of that culture and that scene, but I have a deep appreciation for it. And a lot of the photography, videos, and imagery that was out there just wasn't done the way I do it. And so when he and I met, out of boredom, I started photographing him while I was trying to spend time with him. And I found that I had never collaborated with anybody before in art school. My particular craft was based on me photographing strangers in passing who don't even know that they're being photographed. So to then all of a sudden be photographing an artist in their process of creating art, which then is the process of me creating my art and then blending that into one image, that was new. For a good while, he also thought that I was just some person who took pictures that he can post on his Instagram account and not tag me on that. Because everyone has access to photography, right? On your phone. In theory, that makes everyone a photographer. Fine. I don't care. We need to have a discussion about, hey, you're an artist, but so am I. Just because my medium is a lot more accessible to the general public versus yours doesn't mean that my work isn't less of artistry than yours. That was a separate discussion. But something interesting that happened after that, we would talk about how I would frame things. For anyone who doesn't know yet, the majority of my work comes from black and white. And I always say I photograph black and white mainly, and my husband always paints color. So he's my color guide and I'm his black and white guide. Mr. Burnett once told me at Photoville 2015, I asked him, how do you choose between black and white and color when you're photographing? He says, I don't. I use multiple cameras and multiple types of films, so I never have to choose. And by him saying that, it validated or kind of gave me this wholehearted like permission to say that whatever you're already doing is fine. So when I started photographing graffiti, specifically my husband, he was like, wait, so what you're saying is that I bust my ass all day to make all these lines, make all these layers with all these different colors and outline it and make it sparkle and cool for you to then take pictures in black and white to completely diminish the hard work that I do to create these pieces in color. So he brought some interesting points to my attention. He also introduced me to layering and the way I layer objects in my imagery, the way he layers in graffiti. So that was a really interesting conversation from his point of view. What I ended up countering with was there are so many photographers out there that photograph graffiti, pieces, trains, tags, you name it, but no one really photographs and posts, never mind wants to be known for that, is the capturing of the process. So when you go to my website, you will never see the finished piece. You would have to go to the artist profile to find it because I don't take that picture. And I told him that my appreciation for the craft is the layering, is the stillness, is the moments that you have with the other writers who are writing on that wall. The moment where you have a beer, a slice of pizza, where you're just looking, taking a moment to take it in. Where do you want to change something? How did you fuck up? Where do you have to make it better? Painting next to someone else who is that much better, has been in the game longer or practice longer, you kind of copy what they do or a technique that they do. That entire process is relevant. Because the beauty of craftsmanship is that it takes years, hours, minutes, dedication for you to get to where you are. I find that it's worth capturing and telling that story. And I said, on top of that, why should I do what you already do? And why should I do what other photographers are doing within graffiti? So when I'm taking a picture in black and white, it's because I'm stopping that time, that moment, that stillness. Because in all fairness, some of these guys and how they paint, there's music, there's food, there's people, there's friends. Like it's sometimes kind of like half a block party. I always say it's like a still life of the street. And that's what I want to show. So we came to a really interesting place of all the other imagery really comes together beautifully in a way where it shows the process, the artist, their artistry in combination to my artistry and my style and the dedication that I bring to the table. And then allowing that to be a body of work. I've never created a body of work before. Sure, it's like an album of like Cuba because you know like Cuba 2016, fine, but a whole piece is a whole day's worth of work. It's an album. It feels very complete. Never did I think I would transition into that world, that culture, but you girlies know. When he's a basketball player, you go see him at the basketball court. If he plays football, you go watch him play football. If he paints graffiti, you're going to go watch him paint graffiti. Like, it's just what you do when you are really, really fond of someone. And out of pure boredom is where all of this came from. They were painting the Stockwell Hall of Fame. I was there for 9 hours watching these schmoes trying to paint their name. And all I could do was like, what am I going to do with all this time? Like, I'm not going to go eat by myself and explore by myself because he's here. You take pictures because, girl, that's what I do. So that's what I did. And to think that years later, I genuinely love the process and collaborating processes and styles and having one photograph just speak so loudly of what it takes for one person to create a graffiti piece. I'm really surprised that I then feel like my job is done, which really jumpstarts this whole new era in my life in photography and how I see photography. I learn a lot by being around these guys. I'm going to name drop you again. Soten from Denmark. I'm only laughing because like this guy met me when I fell in love with my husband and he was like a third wheel kind of to the whole story. Either way, I asked him, I was like, you have a lot of followers. You're really big in graffiti. Like, what is one thing that you learned? Like a piece of advice you can give me? Because it's really easy to give up, right? So what is one thing that you would tell me? And he said, if you're going to go do it, make sure you're going to be the best at what it is that you do. I was like, oh my God. I was like, have you seen his work? Like, he's so good. And mind you, Son is so, so nice. That was 6 years ago that he told me that. Until this day, I really think about that a lot of I just want to be the best at this form. Like we can all coexist. I have no hate or shame towards any of the other graffiti photographers out there. It's just, and I don't even call myself a graffiti photographer. It's just, I'm a story collector, a storyteller. That's all I do. I just want to be the best at this version of it. And that's all. I just find that it doesn't have to be that complicating. I realized how that transformed me was pure bliss, confidence, and just zero fucks given at this point, right? Like if everyone on Instagram is a photographer, model, video creator, editor, engineer, then why not, right? Like if we can all coexist and there's a space for everyone, then I should put in my effort and my best foot forward to just at least try it, step into that unknown. And this is such a random story. When Facebook first came out, you have to like add your name, right? So people can find you. And there was always something in me that I hated the fact that I would put my real name on there. So like I never had, it was always like my first name and then like another last name. So my last name for photography for a very long time was Rochelle D, Rochelle D-Y. It's kind of like your alter ego. I learned a long time ago in art school that you have at least 5 different personalities. One with your friends, one with your family, one with your coworkers, one as an artist, and one by yourself. So I was like, all right, that's fine. I agree with that. I love that. That gives me a lot of diversity. It gives me a lot of different ways and pockets to be who I am. And I can live with that. So Rochelle D for a long time was my artist name. Then that molded into my Instagram name for just, you know, graffiti stuff. Okay. Then I met these graffiti writers. And they all write their name, what their graffiti name is. And it was a moment of, you're safe to do the same. I may not write the name, but the name represents that personality of mine. So I created Master Roe with the intention that I want to master everything about Roe and everything about that photography Roe, because she has so much to learn and still so much growing to do, and I'm here for it. And I'm really content. I thought I would be happier, but I think it's the contentness that just gives me, it's like butterflies almost, because it just feels like that's what it always had to be. I was just really late to the party. From my history of how I got into photography and how I ended up going to travel within art school and moving into W139 and being on that high and then going to the casino, and I was like, all right, like I could do this. And I did that for 4 years and nothing came of that, because the truth of the matter is I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to tell anyone to fuck off if they didn't believe or agree with how I identify myself. I'm in a place now where I just refuse to do that. Coming to America also really changed that perspective and perception of everyone needs to identify themselves here. And it gave me the freedom to say, oh, okay, I get to do that too. I don't have to be one thing anymore. Everyone here in New York and in America is so extremely diverse. Sometimes I sadly think of what opportunities I've missed in my 20s, but there's no way to know. And I can't sit on that for too long. And creating Master Roe, it's like being around graffiti writers. It's like cool. It's your alter ego. There is some type of anonymity to it. And I always say that if you went to my website for Master Roe, like just have the work speak for itself. Not because I was girly or not girly enough or pretty or not pretty or I wear something that you don't like. It has nothing to do with those things. The work just speaks for itself, because that's all that matters to me. And all that matters to me is that you, the viewer and the listener, has some emotional response to that, that it does something to you and with you. I really hope that it brings you imagination and flow and inspiration and energy. Sometimes you just need that, and it's okay if you get it from somebody else. Sure, shit, I go through Instagram all the time to find that inspiration, to listen to videos of people creating their work and struggling with their work and how they don't really know what they're doing because they've just been doing it for so long, and how they reinvent themselves. Like, it's okay. And that's all I really want. And to just show the appreciation that I have for the places that I visited by being able to say that I respect it, that I love it, and this is a full, wholehearted extension of my existence. And that's all that I want Master Roe to be. It's not to be the master of anything. It's to be the master of myself. And I'm the only one that can do that. I really want to say that I have great, great respect for every artist that I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with, whether or not we still speak today or not. It's really challenging to be a person that creates art, because it is an extension of who you are. It's really easy for you to become misunderstood by it, judged by it. It's a very vulnerable side that you're sharing. It's a really big shout out to all the really awesome graffiti writers that I had the pleasure of meeting, that I have the pleasure of hanging out with and speaking with and have the honor to call my friends. Because as much as I am not a writer, I also acknowledge that sometimes you don't get to be a part of something, but you can create it yourself, and you can draw inspiration from a community or culture that maybe you don't have or that you belong to. But that doesn't mean to say that you can't have that influence you. And I love this premise of that anonymity and having a different personality and a different name for that, and pushing that to have people know you for it. And that name isn't just what they know you for. It's the way you write it and the way you color it in and the way you accentuate it and where you put it in the world. And I love that premise that it gets to travel. And I want to be able to provide that as well for myself to travel and take photos, but for the viewer to travel when they see the photos. There are a lot of life lessons from my journey to becoming a photographer, but I also know that it's never too late to do anything. And I want to show my work. I want to have my work be in office spaces, in a building, at an airport, in your living room, in a coffee table book. I want my work to be a gift. I hope I get to share that emotion in a form of a photograph with as many people in the world as I can. It all stems from love and it all stems from purpose. So through photography, through storytelling here, and through coaching, you get the purest form of who I am with a message of love, purpose, and belonging and acceptance. And whatever that does with you and what it does to you, I hope it's only positive things. And I encourage you to do the same. And if you don't have it, then to go find that. You're worth it to have that as well. Thank you all so much for being here for this two-part episode on analog photography and Master Row. This part about me should just be an imagery. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. If you'd like to follow my journey on Instagram, please go to @thisisropodcast. And check out my show notes for more links and information on all the artwork and artists that I've mentioned. Until next time, this is Ro.